I call the February 6, 2024 Committee of the Whole meeting of the Glencoe Park District to order. Lisa, please call the roll and note the time.
Member Gorin will approve her in a second. Member Covey is going to check in. Member Schneider?
Here.
Member Spector?
Here.
Chair Spain?
Here.
Commissioner Covey?
Here.
All right.
And did we record Commissioner Warren?
You have to do this motion.
Oh, okay. I entertain a motion to approve Commissioner Boron to attend the meeting via video conference.
So second.
All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Thanks, Stephanie, for joining.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, so it is our practice not to address questions at this time. However, we will take comments under advisement. Is there anyone who would like to make a verbal comment? If so, please limit the comments to 3 minutes per person.
Our one visitor said no. Thank you.
All right, great. So kind of on to the meat of the meeting. Lisa and John, please provide a synopsis of the budget and looking forward to hearing about all of your hard work.
Actually, I really turn it over to John and Brian and just thank the team for an excellent job in budget preparation again.
All right. Thank you, Lisa. Good evening, everyone. To echo Lisa's point, first off, I just want to say thank you to the staff, especially Brian Jacobs, our county manager, who's here tonight, for his help throughout the budget process. It's a lengthy process, a lot of parties involved, so a lot of moving parts. Proud to use Kyle and Aaron for their leadership in their respective departments. Again, a lot of information for non-financial folks, and then being able to get all the information in a very seamless, efficient manner. And share Lisa for your leadership in the budget process, challenging us and making sure we're doing all we can here. And the board for your governance and oversight for our fiscal operations here. So regarding that budget timeline, it is a pretty lengthy one. It really is, it's nearly a year-long process. We really kind of kick off our budget process in May. And that's to meet to discuss logistics and how we're going to record the projections and the budget. And mainly in the summertime, working through those projections. If you recall, we were able to provide quarterly projection updates, both in July and again in October this past year. And that was part of the staff's hard work in pulling together those numbers during often a very busy time for them during camps and so on. So. That's mainly projections. Once we get into the fall time frame, when we pivot to really pulling together the budget amounts, we're discussing capital, things of that nature when we get to October. So that's the Fund 65, 69 discussions. About midway through the process, Lisa reviews a first internal draft, provides her recommendations in areas where she feels savings might be able to be achieved also. Statutory requirements is that we submit budget within 3 months of the start of our fiscal year, so we have to have it filed to the county by the end of May. That's our appropriations ordinance. The board typically approves this budget at the March board meeting, and then the appropriation ordinance is approved in April at the board meeting, and then we are good to file it with the county. I'll get into the difference between budget and appropriations here on the next slide here.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
So, if I recall our fiscal year, we have a weird fiscal year in the end of February.
Yes.
And then, but the budget doesn't become effective until into the fiscal year?
Correct. We have until the first quarter to file the appropriation ordinance with the county clerk. That's our legal authority to be able to spend the money.
Okay. And so in the meantime, our authorization for appropriations is based on, I guess I'm assuming in practice, this budget, but
pretty much in practice, yeah, but the statutory requirement does allow us to go out through the first quarter.
Okay, that's...
So the budget's approved. The budget's approved in March, so that's what we go off of.
Yeah, I understand, but we do in practice. It just seems a little like you want to, like, I guess you don't understand why, like, I thought that appropriations had to be approved.
Yeah.
And so that's just a little unique. Okay.
Yeah, and obviously that's why we discussed it this meeting before we get into any real spending. Obviously, we'll kind of release it in more of a formality of March and April board meetings. So, again, appropriations is our legal spending authority, so that's what we're allowed to spend. And the budget serves more as that tool for our day-to-day operations to manage our expenses, to kind of determine where we're going to be from a revenue standpoint. And then it's a really important distinction between the two, because going over budget on an expense account isn't necessarily a negative thing. And it could be, you know, we did more rec programming and we incurred more expenses, but on the flip side, we gained a lot more revenue too. So not necessarily a bad thing to go over budget. It's when we exceed appropriations. And again, that's not necessarily a negative thing too. There could be a perfectly good reason for exceeding appropriation, but that's where we need to go through the process, the legal process of making sure that our budget goes up pretty. We need to adopt a formal amendment to our appropriation ordinance, and it needs to follow the steps of 30-day public inspection and all the legal requirements that come along with just adopting our appropriation ordinance. So for that reason, we typically, it's the best practice to put some cushion in between your budget and your appropriation amount, which is what we've done this year, similar to what we did in the prior year. So about a 24% cushion between our budget and our appropriation. This year, we're planning on appropriating around $15.1 million compared to $26.2 million. A lot of numbers up here. The main reason for the decrease is the decrease in capital spending, because we do need to appropriate for our capital spending. So obviously, the significant renovation at Weinberg fiscal year was a big part of that. If we look purely at an operational perspective, so pulling out that capital, you'll see that our budgeted appropriations are $16.8 million compared to $16.4 million in the prior year, so a very modest increase of only about 2.56%. I'm going to get into the details as to what's driving that in the upcoming slides there. So just some highlights of our fiscal 24-25 budget. Again, we're from an operating perspective, we're budgeting $15,371,000. So that's actually about a 3.6% increase. Our capital budget is decreasing this year, mainly due to the completion of the Weinberg renovation, and we spent down our 2020 bond proceeds. From an operating revenue perspective, we are budgeted to increase about 8.95%. The number is slightly skewed with some one-time items from the prior year. Remember, we did abate a portion of our debt service levy, so reinstalling that portion of the levy this year, and also our interest income is really taking off. So factoring out those two items, our operating revenue is expected to increase a little over 6%. If you'll recall from the adoption of our tax levy ordinance in November, we had approved an operating levy up to the lesser of CPI or 5%, which was 5% this year. So obviously that 5% comes in to that number, along with the planned increases for our rec programming, which gets us to that shade over 6%. Our rec programming, I'm going to get into a little more detail on that, but looks very strong again this year. From a property tax standpoint, we did have the reassessment this year, significant increase in EAD, which is going to reduce our limiting rate. Remember, there's an inverse relationship between EAD and our limiting rate. And again, our overall growth is capped at 5% under PTEL, the property tax extension limitation law. Interest income, we are expecting a very healthy year for interest income again, given market conditions, which I'll speak to in a few slides. So I know there's quite a bit of numbers on this slide that could be a bit overwhelming, but just to kind of walk you through cursor here. So the columns, the first column here is our funds and departments. Remember, our corporate and recreation funds all have individual departments within them. And then it shows our total revenue, our budgeted expenditures, rebalance for general and administrative allocation, and then ultimately what our excess revenue over expenditures is for that particular fund and our department. So the number I want to draw your attention to here is the major fund operating total for budgeted excess revenue over expenditures, that number circled in red there. So before we do any kind of transfers between our funds, we're projecting that our corporate fund and our recreation fund combined are going to have an excess of revenue over expenditures by slightly under $1.4 million. So this is a very healthy number. But keep in mind, as I mentioned, this is before any transfers. So we're not yet factoring in those transfers. And right off the top, as you remember, we annually will make a transfer into Fund 65 to fund our operating capital to kind of keep the lights on, as we describe it, for Fund 65. So really, you got to put that there, subtract that $525,000 from that $1.3 million. So factoring that in, that number would be around $800,000, a shade over $800,000, which is a very healthy number still, for sure. But also keep in mind that about $420,000 of that is interest income. So again, 2 years ago, that just wasn't there. It was pretty much non-existent, our interest income. So we're certainly benefiting from it now, but as I've talked about in the past, we got to be careful not to build that into our operating budget, just be cognizant of the fact that, you know, in these types of years, we are going to have that residual that we can transfer into Fund 69. So then factoring that out, we're at about $400,000. Which again is a good, very healthy number. And just one other thing I'll point out too is our pension and retirement fund. Our contribution percentage, our employer contribution rate this year is 7.92%, which means we're going to budget about $335,000 for that. That's the lowest it's been in about 10 years. So that's sensitive to retiree census information and changes in census data, changes in retirees' status. It's sensitive to investment earnings, actuarial assumptions. So there's a lot that goes into that number. So again, just pointing out that if that number were to go up, that's going to pull from the operating levy too. So again, while we have a very good number this year, a very healthy number, certainly those things can change, and we look to adopt structurally sound, balanced budgets, and not just evaluate 1 year. So it's important to just keep those things into consideration. Again, when we have years like this, transfer into our operating our master plan fund, and just be aware that it could change year to year. So given that we are proposing a pretty significant transfer this year into Fund 69, we're proposing, so again, $525,000 comes out of the corporate fund for Fund 65, and then we're proposing an additional $800,000 come out of the corporate fund for Fund 69 master plan. So that puts that transfer at $1,325,000. In addition, we're proposing a $1.2 million transfer out of the recreation fund. So that's going to equate to $2 million, an additional $2 million going into our master plan capital fund, Fund 69, which we'll get that fund balance number up to about $5.7 million, summarized here.
Nick? Next question.
Sure.
So I don't know if you're right in front of me, but as I recall, it's the $1.2 million transfer and then $800,000 transfer?
Correct. The $800,000 transfer is coming out of the corporate fund.
Okay.
And the $1.2 million is coming from the recreation fund. So the $800,000 is part of the $1,325,000.
Okay.
That combined, that's the Fund 65.
Okay.
And John, I just want to make sure I understand this correctly. So obviously, part of this transfer, I mean, we hope to do these transfers, is related to the operating surplus, but also I see that the net change in fund balance is negative, I guess. So compared to, I'm trying to think of year over year, is that just to hit our fund balance target? We're so well above it.
Exactly what it is. That's a great question, and that's why, that's really what drives these transfers, is we get into where do we need to be based on our fund balance policy, and the general recreation fund, of course, are 50% of annual expenditures. So we want to be kind of aware of that, still a little cushion beyond that, and that's really the driving factor for the transfers, is what can we afford after we take our rainy day fund and put it aside in our operating funds, and then what's left to be able to transfer out.
Okay.
So in addition to ensuring that the corporate and recreation funds stay beyond that 50% threshold, our fund balance policy dictates that our non-major operating funds maintain a fund balance of 25% minimum. Our debt service is actually 15 to 25, so a little lower there. And we're comfortable with all the funds there. Obviously, as I mentioned, pension and retirement fund, we're building up a bit of a cushion there just for changes, potential changes in our rates. Workers' comp is somewhat susceptible to swings based on volume of activity there. Audit fund is pretty small. So those are where our fund balance percentages are going to wind up based on this budget as of 2/28/25. And as I mentioned, we obviously don't measure any percentage for our capital fund, but our capital fund is projected to be at about $5.7 million. That's factoring in that $2 million transfer. That's factoring in the remainder of the park grant proceeds that we're expecting from IDNR during our fiscal year 25. A little more detail here on that plan transfer then. So as I mentioned, we're proposing the $2 million broken out between the corporate and recreation fund. Logistically, we're hoping to get approval for that transfer at February 20th board meeting, 2 weeks from tonight. It then shows in our audit reports as of 2/29/24 as a committed fund balance, meaning the board has taken formal actions to commit it for that specified purpose. And just to provide a little context as to where that transfer has been in years past, this is the largest one in at least the last 10 years. In the past 10 years also, we've transferred about $10.5 million between the two funds, split pretty evenly. I'm going to just talk about what we feel are some of our challenges as we're pulling together our budget. So inflation and rising operating costs, and we've talked about this with our comprehensive plan process, but we're obviously subject to PTEL, which limits our property tax increase on our existing EAD to the lesser of CPI or 5%. So really what we wind up with is our revenue is down here and our expenditures are up here, and we're having to fill that gap. And that has been the trend. I do have a slide when we talk about our property tax levy. I do have a slide to help demonstrate that. But that's always going to be a challenge for park districts. We really, our main non-exchange type revenue, so not user fees, but our main tax is property taxes. Whereas other taxing bodies, the village, for example, they're getting an array of intergovernmental revenues, sales tax, income tax, water fuel tax. So there's just additional revenue streams from a non-exchange perspective. For us, it's just property taxes, and that property tax levy is capped at 5%. So that's obviously a challenge. Our capital projects and deferred capital we've talked about. We have a lot of capital that we need to address. We have a very healthy capital project fund balance, as I just talked about $5.7 million we're projecting out. But when you stack that against the amount of capital that needs to take place and the amount of projects that we have on the docket over the course of the next 10 years, then we see that does not, is not going to be enough. And then really just maintaining our standard of service here. As we've set a very high level, and we aspire to stay at that very high level, and recognizing our financial constraints and changing demographics and conflicting interests within the community, and only so much to fund those interests. just a very high level summary of where our budgeted operating revenue is going to be. So the really good thing here is you see that we're pretty well diversified. You see that property tax number, that includes our replacement taxes also, which is a small piece, but you see that at 38%, which is a good number. Historically, it's been 50%. It's been a standard benchmark for park districts. So the lower you get, what that's telling you is that you're able to generate revenue off of your user fees, and you have less of a dependence on that capped revenue source. So that's very good. And then obviously our interest income now getting up to 3% is very good to see too. Obviously our program user fees are 57%. So at that 57%, the recreation programs, and this does exclude Children's Circle, but just a breakout of the categories of the recreation programs, what's really driving that, and we see that our camps are very popular. Camps are leading the way at 36%. And again, this is our kind of our net number, our revenue over direct expenditures. This does not account for any indirect expenditures. So our camps are leading the way at 36%. Youth is at 31%. And then preschool, GJK, ELC, shade under 20%. And again, that does not include Children's Circle, which has its own department. It's certainly our program. So our top five rec programs are adding that, but our most popular programs, Kids Club, stays at the top this year, a net excess of about $245,000 budgeted this year. Our Sun Fun Camp has about $125,000 net excess. Camp Adventure is number three this year at about $110,000. And then Aquatics Camp and Youth Ceramics are both right around $100,000. So again, very, very strong rec programming, very good financial numbers. Before we get into the property tax discussion, I just wanted to thought it would be a good time to revisit our categories of service. So this really kind of serves as the foundation for our budget this year. So in approving the budget, we're really approving these categories of service for another fiscal year. I'm not going to get into the detail on each one of these. Really kind of want to focus on that first column. So basically these are fully subsidized amenities or activities that we're offering to our residents. So it's our parks, our playgrounds, our special events, our 4th of July event, the ice at the Weinberg Center, the beach, things like that, which are fully subsidized. And then that subsidy starts to back off as we get into the different types of programs that are laid out here. So as we get into property taxes, I mentioned, the challenge of being capped at 5% and having that to keep up with our operating expenditures. And this graph, I think, helps to tell the story of that. So this is just our operational taxes. It doesn't include our things like our debt service levy, but really just our operational taxes. And we'll see here that in fiscal 15, we were right around 45%. And we see where that trend has been getting in now to fiscal 24. So that's at 37% this year. Remember the pie graph that I had included replacement taxes, so that's why that one was at 38%. But ultimately, we see that the trend outside of the obvious anomaly of the COVID year at 50%, we see that trend is going down all the while. We've been adopting balanced budgets and ultimately having to fund our operations from other sources of revenue. But what this really tells me and kind of reinforces is that to be able to continue with those subsidized programs and making sure that we're able to fund those very important foundational pieces of our district, we need to make sure we're capturing whatever levy is allowed to us under a property tax extension limitation law.
I see the point that you're making here, but I guess the missing piece that I'd be curious to see what offsets it is how much of this is being capped over time, or is it that our user fee programs are taking off so much that we don't necessarily that our less subsidized programs are taking off?
Yeah, no, and that's a valid point. That's certainly a good point. And there is a component of that. But knowing that, you know, when CPI was much lower, we had years of 1.2, 1.6 increases in our levy. And thinking back, if you just kind of combine them, the in 10-year increments since they enacted the PTEL law, if you break it down into 10-year increments, each 10 years is about 2.3%, including the past 10 years. So we can reasonably assume that our expenses have increased at least beyond that 2.3%. But you're right, there is a component of just more volume being done with the recreational programming, which contributes to that too. Sir, my favorite slide at least. This is our 7% of the bill and 100% of your fund slide. So if you remember last year, we were at 8%, we're now at 7%, and no major shifts between the other taxing bodies. So 6.92% is the tax rate. From an operating expenditures standpoint, we'll just point out our top three categories here at a very high level. Personnel, contractual, and debt service. Personnel is at 39%. Factoring out our capital last year, that number was about 40%, so pretty comparable. Contractual is right around a quarter, and that is largely driven by our rec programming, which is a lot of contractual expenditures being captured there. And as I mentioned, debt service comes in third there, about 10%. So I mentioned the $2 million transfer and the resulting $5.7 million fund balance that we're expecting in the capital project, Fund 69. So that fund balance is after these expenditures. So we are planning on a little over $1 million in capital expenditures out of Fund 69 for this upcoming fiscal year, the largest being the renovation or reconfiguration of the racket courts that is still to be determined. We're budgeting $680,000 for that. We have $225,000 budgeted for really a lot of planning and architect and design, knowing the pipeline projects that we have. We're hoping to get our gas kiln finally installed this year. I know Kyle received some positive news on that front recently, so hopefully that'll be up and running this fiscal year. And then relatively minor in the grand scheme of things, renovations to our ball fields at West and Watts, respectively.
So the racket courts, a reminder, those are two sets of courts, and then next year we're budgeting the other two. So
our Keeping the Lights On capital fund, our Fund 65, so this is going to be a big year of IT for us. Our servers are set to expire in November. We need to decommission them by then. We're currently working with Excaltech, evaluating our options, whether we go with physical servers again, a cloud option. What we do know is that it's going to be likely over $100,000 for that project alone. So we are budgeting for that. We have some switches to replace the routine IT, which has typically been in the $50,000 to $65,000 range the past couple of years. Kyle presented on most of this other stuff at the December committee meeting, so I won't get into too much detail, but some of the other big ticket items are the tri-deck mower, the replacing the truck that had to be deferred, the shade structure for the Dakin playground, security upgrades, elevator controls, ejector pumps, fun stuff like that. Our salary and wage scale, so at we did approve the 4.5% merit pool at the December meeting. So that equates to about a $135,000 increase in salaries this year. And we'll also point out we're in year five now of the dollar minimum wage increases. So we're up to $14 an hour, which obviously has a significant impact on us based on the volume of seasonal staff and younger people that we employ as potentially their first job. So obviously that's a 8% increase in those wages and also starts to compress on the other folks and just has that kind of domino effect that we see. So we need to be cognizant of that also. Let's just go over our fund listing real quick, just kind of a refresher. So these are our funds with their associated fund numbers. The corporate and recreation funds do have individual departments that are captured in there. So if you were to kind of look at that big summary spreadsheet that I was talking about, that had $1.4 million change, excess revenue over expenditures, it's really just kind of laid out in this format. So if you do get into the budget detail, it's good to know what the fund number is and also what the department number is. This would be useful. To take it a step further, our full GL definition. So again, fund and department is going to be the first two sets of numbers. If we have a program number, which will really only apply to our recreational fund, that'll be the third set of numbers, and then the account number is the last set of numbers, the four digits. Revenues being 4,000 series, expenditures being 5,000 series. In the budget detail, you really won't have much to look at in terms of assets or liabilities. This is what a typical budget detail looks like in your book. As you get into it, just again, knowing exactly what you're looking at, I try to highlight. So we have the fund breakout, we have the department breakout, we have the program that applies, and then again the account category, just keeping in mind, again, that 4,000 or 4 is our revenues, 5 is our expenses. So I'm going to spend a little time now on some of the larger departments and talk about some variances year over year. So starting with our corporate admin department and focusing on the last two columns here, to identify some of the larger variances. So tax receipts in the corporate fund, corporate admin fund, are budgeted actually at 8.82%, which you might think to yourself, wait a second, aren't we capped at 5%? And the answer to that is yes, we are. But there's a few other factors that kind of go into that. So we are planning on getting the 5% on all old EAB. But there is no cap on new growth, so we are going to expect to receive some new growth this year. And there also is a law, Public Act 120519, which allows for tax capped districts to be increased as a result of revenue that was lost due to property tax assessment appeal refunds. And we are allowed to put that in mainly in the corporate fund, so we don't have to spread that across all the other funds, which have a little more restrictions on how we can spend that funding. Also, a slight timing difference there too, based on the second installment being late the past two fiscal years. I'm sure everybody's gotten their property tax bill and see that it looks like the county's back to their normal cycle of having the bills due in March and August. So given that, we were optimistic that we'll be able to capture our full levy this upcoming fiscal year. Interest income I talked about here. So again, we're still at really high levels. The thought is that rates will likely start to go down in this calendar year, but not by much. So we were projecting about $240,000. We did back off on that project on the budget to about $180,000. So still $40,000 more than we budgeted in the prior year, and just expecting some downward trend probably come quarter four of 2024. So just being careful in what we're budgeting there for interest income. The fund transfer out, that difference of $40,000. Again, that's just that $1.3 million. That is the operating capital transfer and the master plan capital transfer. Our general administrative department, so this department is really just an in and an out, and it accounts for the administrative structure of the district, but the costs are ultimately charged to other departments. So we see here that we're actually having a decrease in expenditures, 1.434 compared to 1.417 in the prior year. So the main reasons here, so we do see salaries increasing by about 4.7%, so in line with the merit pool. But the real large decrease here is in contractual, and that really has a lot to do with the timing of our comprehensive plan billing. So remember, that was a very significant expense, mainly budgeted for fiscal year 24. So we will really just not be repeating that expense or a majority of that expense in fiscal 25. And our insurance remained relatively flat. That's really due to some favorable open enrollment elections that we saw this past year.
have a quick question.
Sure.
Quick question. I recall there was a potential for a pretty significant expense for paid leave. Is that something we need to be budgeting for?
Yeah, we were going to talk about that a little more when we got to Children's Circle. So while the Illinois Paid Leave for All Act is exempts park districts, it's something that we are looking at just from a competitive labor perspective, being able to offer benefits that competing agents, competing entities are able to provide or forced being provided. So that is something that we are looking at for specifically Children's Circle. There is also the Cook County to try to adopt an ordinance, and there's some uncertainty as to whether that's gonna stick or not, so we're still kind of keeping our eye on that. So we're working on implementing that the upcoming fiscal year, not really too much budgeted for it this fiscal year, but something that we will likely be building in the future year budgets as we establish the program. Parks Maintenance Department, so Kyle obviously put in a lot of work on this one, and it's relatively flat this year too, and that's the result of net savings that will be realized by reduced utility expenses and contractual budgets. So we see here that salaries actually are increasing by about 11%, and that's because we are budgeting for a full year of an assistant director of parks and planning. But we do see pretty significant decrease in utilities and contractual, 17 and 6% respectively. So the decrease in utilities is really driven by using less water at Duke Park. Kyle and his team were able to figure out a way to kind of reduce consumption without really having it noticed by many. So that really made a big impact on our water utility bill. We do have a decrease in shared services mowing that's not down to zero as we've fully taken mowing in-house now. And then that decrease in the fund transfers out, that's going to be a common theme amongst all the other departments because that's what's paying that general administrative department that I talked about. So obviously the decrease in those expenditures helps to result in the decrease for the fund transfer out. As far as the TAKIF admin department goes, so this one mirrors our corporate admin in a lot of ways, especially from a tax receipts and interest income perspective. So we do see those similar type of increases for tax receipts and interest income. Notice the taxes are throttled back a bit than the corporate fund, or the shade under 7%. Again, new property, more timely collections on the second installment are what's pushing that beyond 5%. From an expenditure perspective, we're budgeting for increases in salaries, which is a combination of the 4.5% merit pool and the addition of a full-time recreation facility coordinator. Decreases in both electricity and natural gas will be realized due to reductions in rates. We're actually rebidding electricity in March of 2024 and natural gas goes in September of 2024. And the expectation at this point is that the rates will remain relatively consistent and nowhere near those elevated levels that we experienced a few years back. Contractual includes an 8% decrease in maintenance service agreements, and that's for decreases to consulting services. That's our freelance marketing, the service agreements is our HVAC, fire alarm, and elevator type items. And also we do have some decreases in consulting services for last year we hired a freelance marketing professional while I was on maternity leave. And we're also going to see significant decreases in our credit card processing fees as we fully moved over to ACH for significant billings effective November 1 of 2023. So we're going to really reap the benefits of those savings as we get now into our next fiscal year.
Which one of the credit card changes?
Contractual,
yeah. Great.
Yep. And there is, all of those decreases are actually offset by an increase in building repairs for about $65,000 versus nine payments at the point that's going to take place at the ticket sign. The fund transfers out, you'll see, is a very large increase, and that, remember, is the $1.2 million transfer this year So we added to Children's Circle Department. So we see here that program revenue is expected to increase by approximately 3.7%. So that's due to a combination of increased fees along with shifts in enrollment. Total salaries and wages here have been budgeted nearly flat for Children's Circle. And that was really staff trying to make an effort to recognize the fact that there's attrition in the folks that work down there. And a bulk of the part-time workforce down there, they aren't yet receiving any kind of paid time, paid sick days or anything like that. So it's hard to predict for those unplanned absences. But Bobby and his team and Jess really tried to take that into consideration in budgeting for salaries and wages this year. And again, keeping it flat with where it was budgeted for in the prior year. We're also budgeting for a reduction in food service costs. So given all of those factors, our overall expenditures are budgeted to increase less than 1% compared to the prior year budget. If you remember, in the prior year, we budgeted right to a break-even point, about $6,000 excess revenue over expenditures. This year, we're budgeting that at about $100,000 compared to a projected amount of $190,000 for fiscal 24. Just briefly, we'll touch on some of our other corporate and recreation departments. So Weinberg revenue is up $34,000. That's daily fees, rental, and passes, accounting for that increase, anticipating more usage and excitement around the facility based on renovation. We do have increases in salary and wages, so we did change Shannon Stevens' role to be the beach and ice manager, and as a result, reallocated how her salary expenses are being distributed. And also remember, the minimum wage increases have a pretty large impact here at, for the Weinberg. And beach and boating, that $1 or 8% increase has a pretty significant impact. We're also planning for increased contractual fireplace work at Weinberg to the tune of about $10,000. As far as beach and boating go, pass revenue is going to be down this year. We're budgeting for about a $50,000 decrease in pass revenue, but that is going to be offset by some increases in rentals and daily fees. Expenditures are up only about 3%. Again, that G&A spending really helped us out, and favorable health insurance elections helped us out, as that's directly charged to the beach and boating department. Increase in boat rental revenue, that's due to a 10% increase for non-residents, 5% increase for residents, and we also reduced the discount for second and third boats from 35% to 25%. Fitness is pretty small here, but we are budgeting excess revenue over expenditures by about $7,000. Our other non-major funds, I won't get into too much detail on these. We'll just point out special rec is kind of a big one there. We had budgeted for a $300,000 deficiency in revenue over expenditures last year. This year, we're only budgeting for a $40,000 deficiency. And that's mainly because of the capital spending that was done at Weinberg, specifically on the elevator, as we have those large capital projects that are ADA impact, have an ADA impact, we are able to use funds that are restricted for our special recreation levy. The fine and interest fund, that's the abatement being reflected in prior year amounts and fiscal 24 amounts, so that abatement is obviously one time. No longer effective here in fiscal 25. And liability insurance, not a big change. I will just point out we're budgeting for a deficiency in revenue over expenditures of about $25,000. We really bumped up the levy to that fund to account for additional safety spending, additional spending that we're doing related to safety initiatives here at TACIF and on other sites in the district. So that's been kind of reflected there. With that, that's all I was planning on covering at a very high level. If there's any specific questions on anything in the presentation or within your budget books, I'd be happy to answer those.
That's a lot of work. A really big book. How many hours do you think this takes?
Oh, God.
Now you're taking me back to my public accounting days, right at the budget. How many hours of projects is going to take?
a lot.
It's a very long process. I know for me personally, it really starts to kick in like November, December, January. But again, kudos to the teams that aren't trained in finance, and it's their busiest time of year, and here I am hounding them with emails about, hey, get those projections in by June 15th, as the field out there is full of all different color shirts, and everybody kind of staying real busy. So it is a big effort for sure, and it's absolutely a team effort.
I feel like I'm
going to
thank Dion when I press this button, because it sounds like this whole thing calms your voice down. I would also echo Carol's comments. I know we had a chance earlier this week to go into it in depth. Just a big thank you. I am consistently proud of our finances here at Glencoe. I think we are the top rated. If not, what are we top rated?
AAA.
We're the top rated park district in Glencoe. A lot of it is your fiscal responsibility, and quite frankly, the dedication of this community to support the recreational facilities, the events. So just a big thank you. You already answered all of my questions at our hour-long meeting, and I really appreciate the time, so I don't have anything else to ask.
I have no questions.
Well, if there isn't any further questions, is there a consensus to advance the fiscal year 2024-25 budget first draft for approval at the March 19th, 2024 board meeting?
So,
it's not a motion. Just say yes. You have a consensus.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. Me too. So great work.
Excellent.
Any comments, Stephanie, on the call? Yeah. Good point. Okay. Great. Thanks. So, Elisa, I think we're going to provide an update on the comprehensive plan.
Can I get a copy of your slide?
Sure.
That's great.
And that will also be included, the slide presentation is included in our minutes. So, we'll get you. And Stephanie, we'll get you a copy of that also.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to other business. I just want to talk about the conference plan, just give a brief update. So the administrative team, the comprehensive plan consultants, and I have been very busy behind the scenes, so while you may not have heard a lot, there's been a lot going on. So a comprehensive community survey was sent out to every household in Glencoe. We have reached our quota as of last Tuesday night, so a week from today. So the consultants are wrapping up the data, I guess, cleansing is what they call it, and while waiting the sample file against the census data. So they're going to be pulling together a summary report, which we can expect in the next couple weeks. And we do plan to present that at our community open house on March 6th at 6 p.m. I sent a calendar invite to everybody if you'd like to attend that. Jamie Spock will also be at our March 5th committee meeting to give an update on our strategic plan. There's a possibility that we may change that committee meeting to our efficiency committee, which is all the board members and, if you remember, three members from the public, because that may be a great opportunity to then hear about the survey and give us any, looking at it as a site of where we can look for efficiency. So there's a possibility we might change the name of that, but please keep that on your calendar. So in addition to that, the March 5th and 6th will be holding three administrative procedure analysis focus groups with our staff internally. So those are being broken off into three different groups. And the recreation team, a little bit of administration team, will be a service analysis workshop. So John has been working with Jamie on our administrative financial side of the business, and Jamie's been working with Bobby on our recreation services offering side of it. So that is being analyzed also. So we're excited to share the data. Primarily, the survey looks that people are really happy with the park district, so we're excited to show those results on that. The next thing I'd like to do under other business is talk about our Beyond the Base meeting with our consultant. And I don't know if you want to pull up those slides. And Stephanie will share this slide with you also. They're going to come up. You did get that one. You're right. So you guys have, if you don't have it, that's okay. They have it in front of them in paper copy. Okay. Thank you. So last week, the department heads and I met with Paul Hanley from Beyond Your Base for our kickoff discussion related to a potential referendum campaign. The discussion centered around voter base information, a referendum process, which projects the district may be looking to accomplish as a result of the process. Staff, what they really want to discuss is what projects we would like to focus on for if we were to choose to go for referendum. So we just really wanted to make sure that the board is in line with what we were thinking based on our past capital projects presentations so that we can keep on moving forward with our discussions with Paul. So we outlined some of our projects, some of our conceptual designs. We don't have all the projects that don't have designs, and the budgets for some of these items as we move forward. So we're looking to share these potential projects, get your input if we're going in the right direction. So what we're looking at is potential projects would include the Glencoe Swimmy Beach, and a lot of these are based also on preliminary results from our surveys, what the community was looking for us to enhance. So, Kyle and I are going to be sharing the duties on this one, but the Glencoe Swimmy Beach we're looking at is renovation of the Saffron Beach House interior. As you recall, we've done the outside, but the interior has been, I don't think, touched since the 80s, 90s. Looking at outdoor showers at the site. The boardwalks they're all that like truck decking that pop up, and looking at maybe doing the same kind of material as our pier so that it lasts for another 100 years. The sun shelters, trellis needs updating. The spray ground and splash pad are past their useful life, along with looking at the boat storage, the car, barn, and lockers, trying to maximize our space out at the beach. So those are some projects we're looking at for that site. Do you want to do the boat access?
Trying to kind of separate the
okay. Yeah.
So I just add the boat storage and markers. Would that include extra ones? Because I know there's waitlists for those things, or just redoing what we have?
Well, that's what we would examine. We would look to see if we could accommodate any more, and by doing a different kind of boat storage, maybe we could streamline that and get more in. So I don't have the answer for that yet, but that would be our ultimate goal, to see if we can.
So yeah, trying to separate out kind of the beach amenities from the beach access. We do these all the time back. Most of the time back to the beach, but two larger items would be the beach stairs. We've talked about those several times, the general condition and special safety issues there, as well as the upper ramps and retaining walls. We all know we just did the crib wall and the lower ramps this past year, but in the 10-year window, we will have to look at the upper ramps and those associated retaining walls. Additionally, we have the boating beach, similar to the swim beach side, looking at the boat storage racks and lockers, a better way to kind of lay those out, a more streamlined and efficient method. Replacing the wood deck just south of the boathouse, The concrete work around the boathouse, as well as siding, gutters, and really just minor, modest interior renovations, specifically related to bathrooms.
We're also looking at playgrounds such as Friends Park. That doesn't mean that would be the only one. For example, Milton is our last playground. We just thought maybe that wasn't be a focus of the referendum, but doesn't mean we're forgetting about that. We're trying to focus on other amenities rather than just playgrounds. Take-up, we're looking at upgraded parks facility. As you all know, that some of our facilities back there are over 100 years old. Athletic fields and field lights. Greenhouse, which I want to talk a little bit more in depth about. And then potentially, well, we heard a lot coming out from baseball, youth baseball, and I believe a gentleman came to a board meeting, is batting cages. They're talking, where could we put batting cages? We get a lot of requests for that. Investigate if there's a way to attach a minimal indoor batting cages onto the maintenance facility. That wouldn't something we want to investigate to see if we can do that. So maybe have like just two batting cages or pitching cages, you can call them, and if there ever wasn't a need for them anymore, we could convert that to storage. So I want to talk about the greenhouses, and Kyle's going to take that right there. As you know, we have right now and back in the maintenance area, we have three current greenhouses. We are using one of them. It is a very popular amenity for our active adults, especially Friends of Green Bay Trail, Glencoe Community Garden. There's Glencoe Garden Club, I believe, that uses it. Well, if you see it in our very preliminary plans of the maintenance, those greenhouses would have to be relocated. We want to get your opinion, your thoughts on the idea of transferring these a greenhouse, one with similar size but definitely different look, to a different location. One could be in front of the maintenance area, but the more we thought about it, we thought that maybe this amenity would be best served in next to the community garden, in Shelton Park, right off of the Green Bay Trail and right next to the community garden that is village property. We have had preliminary discussions with the village about if we could do a lease of that property for a permanent structure. They are open to that idea. They just want to make sure whatever went in would look nice. So our images that we're showing there, don't get caught on the size of it, that lower one, but more of a visually appealing greenhouse, such as pictured in there. Yes, correct.
Is that where the village puts its snow?
So that would be that is their snow location, so we would work out something with them for the same amount of square footage to put snow on our property.
And I guess don't they also take their snow and put it on our beach?
They do. If there's big, really big snowfalls, they'll put in our parks. And so we would work out agreement with that. So we're just, I wanted to, we've really never talked about that, but I feel this is a great amenity for our active adults and would like to keep it in our inventory. Just we thought maybe this would be a better spot. So I just really wanted to get your input on that item.
What's the cost, like, of moving it and then the cost of
So we would not move it. The ones that are back there are way past their useful life, so those would be demolished. We do not have an exact cost estimate. Did you do a preliminary one?
For a general style shown on the screen there to meet the same footprint, rough numbers, because there's factors of getting utilities in, you would estimate it to be in the $150,000 to $200,000 range for fully heated plumb higher end greenhouse.
$200,000
for something that looks like one of the pictures on the left. Of course, like with every project, there's different levels which you can go, so that number could depend on what look you're going to come down.
Well, I'd like to remind you, like, you know, we spend $350,000 to $400,000 on playgrounds, so, you know, for active adult amenity, that's really in line.
Now, are we looking at moving one to that location and then moving the other two?
No, we would take down all the other greenhouses at the maintenance right now. We can only use one. the community groups. Back in the day, this was 10, 15 years ago, we used to grow all of our own flowers for the park systems. We found that once we really looked at the cost of staff labor and materials, that it was much more economical to buy our flowers from a wholesale provider, so we don't use those two greenhouses anymore. And those are, again, past their useful life, and we would need that location to redo the maintenance center.
Everyone knows my favorite question is, or my favorite statement is, today's capital expense is tomorrow's operating expense. So 200,000 plus or minus XY, what is the maintenance on something like this?
So I would start with probably the estimated life of that building, something that would be in that 20 to 25 year range before you need to look at another full replacement. Ongoing, you're probably talking about utilities and repairs, minor repairs on glass doors, windows, things like that. The utilities are going to be more.
But it is like self-sustained. We're not going to have to replace the glass every 5 years. You're not going to have to.
I would expect to, barring that is that a vandalism or disaster situation.
Yeah.
I like it.
I mean, I like the structure, but I'm kind of with that
200. Well, this would be a very appealing item in a referendum for our active adults.
Get a lot of use.
It gets a lot of use for those three groups. Yes, and then we would also open up to others that would want to use it, but as for programming and such.
That's a thing, like with all the planning and development, we could bring the potential levels of options.
Yeah. There's we partner with the Community Garden and the Friends of Green Bay Trail a lot for educational programming. We could actually do the educational programming in these greenhouses as opposed to what we have now. So, and being right next door to that Community Garden, which has been proven, you know, it's been an operational 10, 15 years now. The garden, it's not going away. They're also, it's nice because we have electricity and water already at those locations. So that would be seamless.
So, when...
I like the idea of moving it. Sorry.
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, so... In here we say upgraded park facilities, and I know I'm talking about this. When we're talking about the upgraded park facilities, are we talking about the specific?
Yes, and we'll go over that one next.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Because in my mind, I get that this is a huge amenity and appealing to the community, but that thing is in desperate need.
And that would be
about like 200 years.
It would be. This would be, obviously these are all things that we're talking about in, for referendum. That would be the more immediate need, yes.
Okay.
I think as we're thinking about this referendum, it is important to realize that it's going to impact more than just one facility. And as we think about that, it's important to think about what the community wants. I'm not opposed to something like this. I think it's an awesome feature, but I think we have to balance. We have to ensure that we are looking at this eyes wide open and ensuring that that we balance our budget, which we always do, but making sure the right part is being put to use where it's most useful and for. This could be a very useful place, and I think it's just something we did.
We have had those three groups are very active, and they have expressed their desire to keep a greenhouse in town. So,
yeah. And a referendum to collect more revenue to invest in the community means we have to invest in the entire community. So.
Correct. Exactly.
It's
something for everybody. Yeah. Stephanie?
I like the idea of moving it. I think, especially because of what we're in that area, and it's just so money back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't really want to talk about there, so I'm going to get the truth. I like the idea of moving it. Like, I would like to see the survey results and just see like what it said about this amenity and what the community wants, but be great, and we're going to have to attract all members of interest in the community for the referendum. And I'm not sure if I heard this enough. Did you say the village supports it? And I'm wondering if they would partner on any of it, because it's really
They support the idea of us of leasing the land back to us, but they not paying for the amenity, but leasing the land back to us. They agreed with that. Yeah. I don't know if we exactly asked the question in the survey if you want a greenhouse, but we would go back and ask, you know, those parties in the group if, you know, we would talk to them and it's about their interest in this kind of land.
We don't have any land at all.
We could actually move it on the other side of the Green Bay Trail on into Shelton Park, but then we'd have to bring the water and electricity under the pathway, so it just makes it easier if we can move it there and an ideal spot also.
Very close to the Green Bay Trail.
Yeah. And benefit for blocking the train even more for residents, so we think they would be in favor of that. So.
Do you ever see a possibility for naming rights? Would anyone want to have a name?
Absolutely. So, yeah, absolutely. We would entertain, absolutely, naming rights.
A couple questions. Is one of the glass be insulated glass?
You know, we haven't really gone down the thing of a lot of details on the greenhouse. We want to first see if you were open to the idea, but I believe it is, yes.
There are multiple different levels of the type of glass you put on it, up to insulated, or not at all.
Paddleboards and pickleball and the park district provided amenities were in high demand, and we thought we could provide that. And then there's more, it's like maybe four. And the question is could you design it with an option for expansion if you had a lot more demand and people weren't fighting over, hey, I want space, I can't get it.
In terms of the physical greenhouse, the standard size, the largest standard size would be what we would be replacing that we currently have. Expanding, I think, would involve adding yet another one, and then it would get into whether or not the village would be interested.
So you couldn't, well, I was thinking if that were an idea, then you'd get an option for the village, you know, if you want to do that. You couldn't just further extend the one building, you're saying you have to
get
a different size.
Yeah, you would add a second one, otherwise you'd get into a cost.
Okay.
Okay, so a consensus that we can continue to evaluate that.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then the biggest one is the parks facility in back. We did about 3 or 4 years ago, did a very preliminary, what can we fit on the site to make it more efficient and effective. So that's what you see in the upper left-hand corner, and I'll let Kel speak to this.
Yeah, so we're very preliminary, just showing the potential kind of layout of the redesigned site back there. You can see this essentially the existing building would be demolished and have a larger maintenance building built in the general same footprint, looking to better utilize the space, combine essentially the existing square footage of the buildings into a singular modern maintenance facility to adequately provide, you know, storage, potential electric vehicle, electric equipment, move to those types of things.
Offices.
You've all seen the buildings back there. They are not of the modern code, of the modern demands of the park district. So again, these are very preliminary. The picture on the bottom left is just trying to showcase the general aesthetic, what we'd be looking to do, kind of a lean-to style, nothing too fancy, but something that blends in nicely and doesn't, isn't an obnoxious eyesore for the rest of the park. What we have not yet developed, and this is again the other part of TAKIF, is ultimately we would look to develop the ball field or the athletic field and address the lighting as well. We'll look at it as a really larger plan for that entire site, the park's center as well as the athletic field.
we wouldn't be adding more lights. It's just those, the existing poles right now are past their useful life, and we upgraded already to LED, which is...
Yeah, we put LED fixtures, but the underlying infrastructure, the wiring runs, and of course the wood poles are the major concern. We had to reinforce a couple of them and have to do annual assessments.
Yeah, she has pictures over there of that. And then we would also have the capability to add remote to turn off the lights. So currently right now, if someone left the lights on, we'd have to come manually turn them off. So this way we could, you know, do that remotely and eliminate the after hour light staying on.
This giant sloping roof makes me wonder about the possibility of solar panels.
Oh, yeah, that's something we would definitely, we're definitely in it. Entertain is if we can put solar panels on there. And again, we're looking for long-term ability to have electric vehicles, mowers, we with everything in the future, but we just don't have that. So this would be built with the in mind of solar roofs, enough electricity to get to do all those things that we can in the future, charging stations, everything. This is going towards our sustainable, you know.
I think this is top priority in my mind.
And preliminary right now in the survey, the community supports it also. So you'll see that as we get more information on that. We kind of asked that question in our survey. So just looking at preliminary results, it looks like they support infrastructure improvement too, which has made us very happy.
That's good to hear. What I don't see on here is any mention of the dog run that we discussed.
Yeah. Before we renovated that packed parking lot, there was talk about putting a dog run in. We don't think that's really possible because there's wetland back there. It would be a dog run, not a dog park. And then it's in close proximity to our daycare. And as we discussed it, it would almost be, you're going to put this in and then people will be mad because you didn't do something. It would be so small that we would actually cause problems. I mean, something we can definitely investigate in later capital projects. Our consultant didn't think it would be an item that we maybe want to put on the referendum list.
Yeah, I think, we can't have everything every winter, which is not great. I mean, would I see a pool? Would I see a velodrome or whatever it's called that for cats? More play? I would personally love to not even discuss a dog park because we sort of fixed that problem to some extent with our neighborhood.
With our
neighborhood program.
Yeah.
I hear what you're saying, Stephanie, and I know it's a desire, but it's almost like, to me, the dog park is almost like a pool issue. It's always going to come up, but I think we have a pretty good resolution on that with the neighbors. I like the idea of adding pages. I think anything you do to finally invest in baseball, which I know you're going to say Berlin, but I feel like our baseball facilities are a little bit underwhelming these days. I think it's going to be great for us.
Ironically, it's like every time we bring up any kind of activity, everybody's always like, oh, put a take up, there's no houses around and there's plenty of room. People don't realize how much use those athletic fields get.
Yeah.
So not just, it's our softball location, not just baseball, also soccer fields are plotted in there, not to mention hundreds of kids for day camp, that's our primary location. We always try to put everything in this location, and I don't think people realize how heavily used this is, not to mention that our take-up center now is so incredibly used, we don't have enough parking. So you're talking, if you add, I think someone said, put pickleball here. We don't have parking for pickleball. We don't have parking for dog parks. So that's another consideration we always have to remember when we're building these facilities. Okay, the next one is West Park. So at our conference, I went to a meeting with the legislators, and we were talking about OSLAD grants. And it seems that they are going to open up OSLAD grants again, that might be the last one for a while. They're starting to run out of money. So I think if we wanted to go for another OSLAG grant, we should talk about that. And that's it opens usually June, right?
Usually the deadline for applications is like early September, and hopefully sometime in summer.
In summer. So as you know, we've had two full community meetings on West regarding this applying for OSLAD. And if you recall, it was for baseball fields, the dugouts, putting artificial turf in the infield, two pickleball courts, shuffleball, bocce, a small shelter, kind of some of those things that we have up there, a walking path, ADA accessibility, which this park does not have. So this would also be part of the referendum talk, but also it goes a long way if we're showing that we're using a grant or trying for grant funding, using public funds, using our, I guess I'd call it a savings account for it. So is there any appetite for us to schedule to go for this again for an OSLAG grant?
Remind me of the economics here. We have to put in $6 and we can match by line.
Yeah.
Match $600,000.
Yeah, $600,000 we match. Yeah.
Match transit project we exceed. And in turn, go exceed that.
Right. But at a minimum, we could put in, well, so we have to put in all of these lovely elements to be eligible.
You have to put five recreational elements.
For eligibility.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's no way those $5 are going to cost us $600,000. Right, so the $5
is going to
cost us two?
Oh, it's mostly a lot of the baseball field. I don't remember what the exact, was it 1.5, but that was a couple years ago?
1.8 was the cost 2 years ago.
So we're talking so the question is it, do we feel, and maybe this is not a question, but I'd like clarification, do we feel comfortable putting $2.2 million to West to get a 30% return rate, $600,000 in addition to help us, or sorry, $1.8 million from four means probably cost us $2.2 million now.
But you,
so $1.6 million is the last thing at $600,000.
But you,
knowing that the ball fields, all ball fields need major updates as well as ADA compliance on our paths right now and the tennis court, I'd say those four items combined would make it a worthwhile.
And we have
the majority of the expense on this project is the baseball field and the ADA accessibility pathways. The lesser costs are the shelters and the bocce and the shuffleboard and game tables or butterfly gardens or whatever.
What are you going to referendum for on the bond right now? What's the thought on that? What is the max referendum that we can go for without increasing taxes?
Yes, so it's really dependent on the interest rate environment. Our prior bond was $13.6 million. Given where rates are now, we could potentially be around there. I think that's a realistic starting point.
So $13 million-ish, no new taxes. Well, 12 to 13 million, no new taxes. And you're going to dedicate at least call it two-ish to West, plus what do we think maintenance is about again?
Maintenance alone?
Yeah.
6.5 is what we have.
So
that was a while ago, so it's probably more like 8 million.
So 8. So we're basically locking up 80% of this referendum in West and maintenance facility and the green house.
But we also have $5 million in our capital projects fund. So you're right. It's baseball. It's baseball fields.
Yeah, I'll say that my son is also not doing baseball anymore, so I'm no longer involved. But it is important for the community because I know a lot of kids, a lot of girls do softball, a lot of boys do baseball out there. But we should be cognizant that 10 out of 13 million is a big number, and at least by five other, but.
So what we would do at this, if we did not go for OSLAD grant, what would be included is just that bigger field, baseball field, and ADA pathway. So it would come off the street, we have to do ADA pathways. And nothing else then would be done. The courts would continue in, the racket courts would continue in the discussion of the board whether we wanted to convert them to tennis, to pickleball. But
I will put this back on you, John. Do you think that there is a, knowing that you work very closely with Bobby and with Kyle and with Lisa, do you think there is a financially viable way to do both of these big projects? Forget the time consuming, we'll talk about that with Kyle later, but like financially, do you feel good about this? Do you feel questionable? Do you feel?
Yeah, I feel good about it, knowing that we would be able to get $600,000 from the ITNR, knowing that we are projecting that $5.7 million in capital in our capital project fund next year, we'll be able to front, you know, we have to pay that money up front, set it aside. We have a shovel-ready project to enhance the community and amenities. To me, I would feel good about pursuing.
So I have a follow-up question with that, though, because it goes on the rec ballot. Right, like you have to write down the projects and have projects let you go.
It's really just asking for the dollar amount.
Or the offer.
So the bonds
so you don't have to be that specific.
Right, that's all laid out in the official statement.
Okay, so it's when you actually issue the bonds, it's not when you get the. Because I was thinking, what if we don't get the grant?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
And I just wanted to make sure that we weren't. I mean, I think clearly we want to do something about the baseball field, so I mean, regardless, we're going to do that project, but I just didn't want tire cans.
Oh, yeah, we would just put, baseball, or athletic field improvements. It would be more general.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we're unfortunately, to some extent, I feel like we're kids in a candy store, and we have this big chunk of change coming in, and we want to do the beach, and we want to do baseball, and we want to do batting cages, and we want to do, new lights and tape. There's so much we want to do. I would personally do as much as we possibly can, as fiscally responsible as we can, but I don't think I understand fully, and we can talk about this later. What staff recommends where the line is drawn. What is it that you think that we won't be able to do or we can't be able to do to sustain, our financial goals as well as meeting the community needs? So I would almost say it would be kind of a dog park because I think I want dog park and pool and walk magazine. We've been down there. But I would know from you all what you think we can do, what we consider possible and answer our community's needs.
So I don't think we're kids in the candy store because nothing that we're recommending is any new amenity. It's all these items are listed in our heat sheet as the end of their useful life. So that's where we're not going and pulling something that we don't already have. We're keeping up with our current infrastructure. We're not adding new. So that's the important part. And you're exactly right. We may not be able to do all these. We're trying to see if there's anything outliers that you definitely don't want, and then we'll try to do what we always do, is that these will be phased in. We're not going to pass referendum and $20 million worth of improvements will happen overnight. They will be staggered over 5 years probably, and as that goes, we're still replenishing our fund balance to get some of those other projects done.
What I meant by getting candy stores, all my candy is expired and then you can't
be done.
I was literally buying that. I have a whole bunch of bizarre following candy and so
So,
but I hear what you're saying. You're absolutely right.
So the question is, do we want to try for the OSLI grant? We were really close, according to IDNR last time. We do have, they're always worried about that we're next to a school, so that may always be a little check mark if we're going against other people. But is it something the board wants us to pursue? Because if we do, we just need to start those wheels in motion, too.
I'm definitely for it, and I do think it looks good to the community that we continue to go after these grants, especially for going after referenda. And if we look at our other projects that we use grants for, they're heavily used and launched in the community. So I think there would be support behind it. And I do think we have a good chance.
I agree.
You agree?
Yeah.
Tony?
I mean, if you guys really think it's doable, it will keep us financially. We can be financially responsible doing this.
Yeah. How do you feel about the timeline?
can you get, because if we're going to do $8 million on maintenance, can you kind of put your most certain timeline on financing the house by the way, by the time I want to? You feel like we can do both?
Well, I think if we're talking about our timeline for West next year, because we have this kind of pipeline ready to go, we can apply for OSLED over the summer. We won't find out if we receive it until January, but we can make plans for the whole project scope and then a contingency plan if we're not awarded a scale bed version. In terms of the maintenance facility, that's not something we could realistically get going next year. I think that would be one we'd be looking potentially the following year. I think ultimately once we kind of get that direction, we'll come back with kind of a 5-year to 10-year proposal outlay of these projects. We want to just make sure we're kind of
right.
Yeah, the fair minimum, I would think West would be a fiscal 26 project. Maintenance center would be a fiscal 27.
Yes.
I don't care when the money is getting spent, as long as it's getting spent. As long as it's getting spent in accordance with, you know, the right rules. What I'm concerned about is your bandwidth to do two major projects.
Yeah, and I think, again, I think for fiscal year 26, next calendar year, I think West, and we already kind of talked about the other record court. That's not, in my mind, not a capacity issue. The maintenance facility the following year would be the major project that we would have to make.
And,
and
with the maintenance, we probably, for that big of a project, we would bring in a construction manager like we did for Weinberg, kind of the same thing. It's not uncommon to do, in park districts for the director of parks oversee, you know, $5 million a year of capital projects improvement. So we would probably find the resources to make sure it was doable.
Not going to go to technology.
Well, you know, I have strong feelings about Friends Park being one of the most visible. I think the lakefront and Friends Park are, when you think of Glencoe, like everyone goes to the beach, right? So that's a top priority for me. And then just the frequency of people going downtown and then going to the park and just the wear and tear on that park. I don't know when it's officially done with its useful life, but I would imagine it's something that we would probably want to address in the time frame
absolutely.
Referendum.
Yep.
So for me, just for the loved image of Glencoe, very visible park district facility, that's something that I think definitely needs to be addressed. And what's the price for?
For Friends?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a more expensive one.
500 to 700.
Yeah, 500 to 700.
Yeah.
So, go up from there now, but
yeah.
That's not something we can just slot into a regular capital budget.
Yeah. Exactly.
I do have a proposal for engineering design services for Friends Park, so once we kind of have our direction, we'll start to have those discussions about what that looks like, getting community input, and start to lock down a more solid budget number based on what that project.
And just remember, this is just, we're just planning for what would best be for a referendum. This discussion is moot if we don't pass a referendum. We only have $5 million, and then we're going to have a very tough talk about what we want to do with that $5 million. So our concentration will be on educating the community and what infrastructure projects and all these projects are. So that's what we want to make sure. As we develop the information, we have what the board feels this would be possible projects.
One final question, and I think which was Mike was asking as well. So, doing this without the OSLAC grant at West School, would that, if we got the referendum, would that in any way, this project in any way, slow down maintenance?
No.
Okay, that was it.
No, you have 2 years. You have 2 years complete an OSLAC grant, so we would we would manage the time frame and manage the projects. Any other questions on that? Okay.
I just understand.
Yeah.
The batting cages, are those the ones with the machine in?
You know, we're still investigating that.
I wasn't sure.
I think there's two different ways to be a pitching tunnel where you have just human throwing you another human in the tunnel, or you can have a machine get a combination of both. If we're talking about a two-tunnel, it's not going to be a massive structure with major infrastructure. If we're going to be potentially doing a large building, it could make sense from an economy scale to do it at the end of that point.
And most of the noise probably comes from these gated aluminum vats rather than the mechanism.
Well, they would be an indoor facility, and it would be on towards the track side. If we did it, it would be indoor and then the track side. So
I will say, I think that's the one thing that we have never gotten a complaint for on noise at Central, because we have one there.
We do, yeah, you're
and
right.
I've never heard a single, and it's used a lot.
Yeah.
I've not heard a single complaint about that. Let's knock on wood.
It's
right
in the house, but
also
it's not.
Okay.
It's fine.
It's right in the house.
There we go.
It's not the frequency. You hear the hit.
Yeah.
They're not used.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So you're by Central?
Right. He has Steve Gaines' house.
Yeah. Oh, you live in Steve Gaines' house. Oh, I love that house.
Yeah. I'm
Steve Gaines sold you to someone, and then he bought it.
That is fine.
You know,
the frequency is,
doesn't bother.
There we go.
All right. Okay, so that gives us a lot of direction. So we'll keep on working with Paul on informational pieces, because that's the part we do, and then we'll go from there. So we'll keep you updated on that as we progress. The last thing I have, and really it's not really for discussion tonight, I just wanted to, in your folder here is information. We're not really going to discuss it tonight. I just wanted to provide you with information that just came in so that you have plenty of time to read it over about the Frank Lloyd Wright Cottage on Levine's Bluff Park and request regarding signage and the reason why. This will be placed on a later agenda, but what I wanted to provide this and plenty of time so you can read it over, and we'll have it on agenda at a much later time. Please, after you read it, please call me with any questions. I'll be happy to answer them. And that's it. That's it for all their business. Do you need to go into executive session?
Bart, do we need to do anything today?
Nope, okay.
Okay. So, all right. I entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move. Second.
Oh, Jordan? Motion, second.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
All right.
8:33. Thank you very much. All right. We adjourn.